So hey everybody, I'm Ryan Sayer. I'm also known as 2 Echo Zero Romeo Yankee Sierra, and also November Zero Romeo Yankee Sierra. This call sign was awarded to me just today. It's an American call sign, but strangely enough, I actually took the test in Cambridge. So, and you can do that. You're entitled. You don't have to be American. I am American, but I have lived here since 2008, and so it's kind of, it's fun, and, I'll give you a little bit about history, kind of like why did I actually get interested in this. Now, there is a talk on Vimeo with the same title, this Amateur Radio Original Nerd Hobby. Jim Bryce's talk is much more technical in nature. It's much more of a technical introduction to amateur radio. Now, the content of my presentation is a little bit more of the cultural nerdology, and I actually make kind of a loose argument as to establishing, with the advent of electricity and using electricity for communications, that was really the genesis of where nerddom started. So it's a little bit more of a cultural discussion. There will be other talks that'll talk about amateur radio overall, and so if you want to know about packet radio or whatnot, you can come see me and we can talk individually. But this is more of kind of a cultural talk, a kind of like, what does it mean, what exactly this is. But, you know, interestingly enough, Jim Bryce, he had the Vimeo talk. I also have this, kind of this mentor, and there's this terminology in ham radio of an older guy, now I'm burping now, sorry guys. The idea of a mentor, somebody who kind of guides you through the process of understanding it, that's deemed to be an Elmer. And the term Elmer is not used very much in the UK, but in one of the sets of classes to learn amateur radio, Dr. Blaney Roger, he was really fantastic and really had a lot of spirit. He was a new ham, and he didn't necessarily have kind of some of the cultural hang-ups that I think some of the old guard has. He really brought in some enthusiasm into the environment. And then, of course, various people contributed into giving me a little bit more info on kind of the history of the nerddom of hamming around. So, well, I mean, what is a nerd? Anybody self-identify as a nerd? Yeah? Sweet! That's great. Guys, you're in good company. I mean, the basis of this, and this is from, I think, either Wikipedia or Wiktionary. There's... I cite all of my sources in the comments, so if you ever want to copy this for yourself, you'll have information that way. But the idea is that we're either highly technical or that we're kind of living a life of fantasy. And this life of fantasy, you might think of it as sci-fi, you might just think of it as head in the clouds, but I also think of it as creating things, imagining things of what could be, not necessarily what things are. And so sometimes, as nerds, we're social outcasts, or we're getting frustrated, and we're going, ah, I hate the world, the world should be a better place, I wish that the world could change in this direction. And that's the beauty of nerddom, because we actually help revolutionize, we help change the world, and we make the world a better place. And it's very strange to see this kind of romanticism of nerds in the media. You see Facebook. Facebook movie. You're seeing Silicon Valley, Halt and Catch Fire. Really, kind of this strange romanticism in the media of nerds, and they've realized that we do kind of make the world better. It's an interesting thing. So that's the idea of nerd. But in the context of this, what's amateur radio? So amateur radio, really. This is a lot of words, but I'll give you the key thing. It is people that are interested in the concept of radio. So that be playing with propagation, that be possibly using radio to be able to control things, to be able to communicate. There's lots of different elements of this, but it's just kind of people that are fascinated by this. This is not low power FM, so this is not broadcast. This is actually just trying to have a conversation with people. And interestingly enough, if you ever feel like you're a bit antisocial, one of the great things, we're inherently social creatures, but we still kind of like to have that comfortable distance. Amateur radio is great because we can turn on the radio, we can call out CQ and see if someone's out there, they'll respond, they'll talk with us, and then the beauty of it is that if you're done, you know, being social, you can just turn the radio off, and that's beautiful because for somebody who has, I mean, I'm an outgoing guy and I talk a lot, but there are times when it's nice to just say, oh, I just want a little bit of socializing and then I'm done. But the really, really the key thing with amateur radio is that you have to go through a licensing process in order to kind of vet and prove yourself. And the early licenses, they're very reasonable. People oftentimes get a license here in the UK within a weekend. In the States, it's actually self-study most of the time. So oftentimes people will cram, sometimes the night before, and actually get a license pretty immediately. Licenses are actually granted through volunteer coordinators, volunteer examinators, and invigilators here in this country, and they make sure that everybody, you know, has the credibility to hold the license, which is fun. All right. So what about CB radio? Everybody goes, oh, amateur radio, that's like CB, that's breaker 123, right? Not exactly. This is probably, so any of you Canadian in the audience? No? All right, so I sound really enthusiastic, so most times people confuse me for being a Canadian. Many times if a Canadian is tired or maybe just a little bit further just depressed, when they speak, they're oftentimes confused for being American. And so you go, oh, hey man, what's life like as an American living here? And they will get very offended. They will say, I am not American, I'm Canadian. And it's very offensive. But to an American, if you say, hey man, you know, you seem pretty positive. Are you Canadian? You say, no, I'm not Canadian, I'm American. That's okay. That's a nice compliment that you gave me. It's kind of similar to CB radio. A lot of hams, they've worked so hard to study their tests, study the information. They're really focused on, you know, signal propagation and wavelengths and lengths of antennas. And they go, how dare you? How dare you confuse me with CB radio? And really, I mean, back in the day before cell phones, CB radio was kind of this wonderful free world. But it is unlicensed at this point. And a lot of people, this is an editorial comment, but it really attracts the dregs of society. If you're really into trucking and prostitution and drugs at services stops outside the motorway, go for it. Go to town, go to CB radio, you're gonna love it. You won't even need a license. But talking CB, it drives me to drink, so you guys can listen a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, sorry, Snowman. Sorry, Mr. Bandit. The era of 1970s, breaker, 123. How many pounds am I hitting you with? It's kind of gone. So you have to put that into perspective. So, all right. So, and then somebody else said, "Hey, wait, weren't ancient Greeks the original nerds? I mean, here's Pythagoras with his six-pack, kind of pontificating about triangles and stuff." And I would say no, because these guys were socially valued. They said, we like the idea of you dreaming and philosophizing and exploring this unknown world. And so we're gonna give you the respect that you deserve. So were they nerds? No. And besides, glasses and pocket protectors and, you know, it wasn't invented until the 50s. So, yeah. So a little bit more of context. So Marconi, I like to think of Marconi. So Marconi, he's Italian. He emigrated throughout Europe, and I like to imagine that he was growing up, and maybe they said, "Hey Marconi, that sounds a lot like macaroni," and it drove him to say, "Oh, there must be a better world somewhere." And so he saw the research of Hertz, and he was like, "Wow, this is great. Ah, what I should do is maybe I can use this electricity and be able to communicate using a spark gap transmitter." What a spark gap transmitter really is this thing that just creates a lot of static. There's a buzz. It's like turning on your vacuum cleaner and picking it up on your radio somewhere else. It was a spark gap transmitter. So it actually didn't really have a tunable dial. It didn't have any kind of frequency. It just threw some noise out there, and if you used Morse code, you use the telegraph, then you could actually start to communicate wirelessly. So I actually say that Guglielmo Marconi was the grandfather of nerddom. And, you know, of course, we couldn't go back in time to see whether he was picked on for his macaroni-sounding name, but maybe that was enough inspiration, enough push to go into that. One more thing is he was a bandwidth pig. I mean, he used all the bandwidth possible, but I guess there was nobody else to complain about that. So Yeah. But interestingly enough, these guys all over the world were kind of like, wow, this is interesting. Let's start playing with this. And so they started building their own radio equipment, building their own stations. And by the time, I mean, it's not that long, the first cross-Atlantic communication going into finally having amateur radio stations, an actual book saying, here are all these people participating on the bands. And so I would say between 1910 and 1930, that was really the genesis of really the enthusiasm of the hobby where people got into. So there's the spark gap. Everybody knows who Hedy Lamarr is? No? She's a beautiful actress. She was very prolific, but she actually contributed to helping win the war. And her co-invention is this frequency hopping, this spread spectrum concept, which really is the beginning of what actually enabled us to be able to use mobile phones. Because as we use mobile phones, we're bouncing between a strong tower that we're connecting to and a weak one. And so if we move somewhere else, we move to that spectrum that other tower is going to, and then we're able to work quite well. So Hedy Lamarr, I would say the most beautiful original nerd. People might dispute that, but I'll have to see pictures to really see whether that's true. She was amazing, and she started exploring this idea. And so during that time, and you can see kind of this evolution, where we had spark gap technology, where spark gap was just throwing a bunch of white noise out into the atmosphere and picking it up somewhere. And then we're kind of going into a little bit more of better oscillation. So very low frequency, and then high frequency. And we're actually starting to experiment a little bit with very high frequency communication. So yeah, it was cool stuff. So after the war, the word nerd actually came about. So it came from a Dr. Seuss book, and the Dr. Seuss book it was just basically this just kind of Seussian gibberish. But somebody actually gelled on that nerd word, and they went, okay, I'm going to use that in substitution of the word for square. And oftentimes, sometimes square was cool, but square became square, and maybe it's hip to be square now, so I don't know where square is, but nerd's pretty obvious what it is. But the idea is nerds started leveraging this kind of communication technology, and we were able to get a lot of post-war equipment to be able to just make stuff. Because they weren't, World War II wasn't going to come back in theory, so there was all this great stuff to be able to just hack on and see how it works and how to make it work. So really, really cool. And this world actually led to some very very impressive modern inventions. I'll give you some of my favorite nerds that we dealt with. So Steve Wozniak, very prolific ham. He actually got his ham license when he was in the sixth grade. So that was probably like 11 years old. There are stories about people getting their ham licenses at 4 or 5. That's really, really super aggressive. But hey, if you've got nerd blood churning through your veins, it's a great outlet. Everybody knows Nolan Bushnell. Yeah, no. He was the co-founder of Atari, and so the Atari system. He actually worked with Steve Jobs, who Steve Wozniak actually built some stuff for Nolan. So there's a little bit of nerd incest in there. Robert Moog, the musician, or the gentleman who made the Moog synthesizer, you would imagine that the oscillations that you're creating through radio frequency would be very similar to the oscillations, the tones that you're creating on a synthesizer. So Moog was really, really, I would imagine that this was very complimentary and got him to thinking, all right, how do I make this electric piano make some amazing sounds? Bruce Perens, any Debian hackers out there? Yeah? Yeah, so Bruce Perens was huge. I mean, he's very significant in terms of the open source community. In addition to that, Bruce Perens, I don't know if he really hates Morse code or if he just feels it's obsolete, but he helped actually take away the requirement to learn Morse code in the late 90s, and now we can just focus on digital modes and focus on the actual purity of radio rather than have to learn Morse code in order to be qualified to use this. A couple more, Jack Kilby. This guy invented the integrated circuit. So Jack Kilby was very significant. He worked with Robert Noyce, and it was quite significant. A couple of British signifiers, Maurice Wilkes. Maurice Wilkes, actually, he's the guy. So how many software folks are we here? So a couple programmers. Okay, so he is the guy that actually invented the concept of microcode, the concept of subroutines, the concept of symbolic labels and macros. I mean, this guy just did some amazing stuff for computer science. To understand, what is possible is really what's here. And then Helen Sharman, she was the first Brit in space, although the British government really didn't like her because she went to the Russian space station instead of the International Space Station. And then a couple of celebrities, they had some inner nerd in them, and so they wanted to kind of release that. Interestingly enough, Marlon Brando, he was almost bedraggled by his celebrity, and so he would actually call himself Martin sometimes over the air, just because, and they actually spelled Brando, B-R-A-N-D-E-A-U-X, because he was like, oh gosh, I want people to know me for me. I don't want people to just be seeking me out as a thing. I'm gonna take another drink, I hope you don't mind.
Yeah.
Okay. And Priscilla, any Bollywood fans? This is like the biggest Bollywood actor, Amitabh Bachchan. He's also a big ham too. So yeah, little more context as far as like, because there's a whole variety, a whole spectrum of nerddom, and I like to think of something for everyone. And no, it's not related. The different hamming for different nerding. It's not a reference to forward error correction. Not Robert Hamming. So. But the idea is that really the prime feeling is that we want to create some international goodwill. We want to reach out and actually talk to people. And so the first time that I actually rocked up on Wimbledon Common, and I set up my antenna, and I set up the battery and everything, and I could hear people talking and conversing. And then, I heard someone call out, and I responded, and I was like, hey, this is me. And that was a thrill. That was a thrill to hear somebody that I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know their background, and I'm learning about them. What is it that you're about your culture? What is the equipment that you use to actually reach me? You're thousands of miles away, and it's quite fun. So it's a little bit more of like a cleaner social network because people know that they're being exposed and they're using their call signs, so they're being honest with who they are. And it's just an exploration. It's a social exploration. But as far as the other things, de-expeditions, that's the idea of that you might go on a boat, and the boat wants to be able to make contacts with the different countries as you're in the middle of international waters. People actually welcome you onto these yachts and say, oh, you're a ham, you're an amateur radio person, you can be our comms person. And you can get free travel to lots of exotic locations just by having this credibility of having a call sign and saying, hey, I'm willing to come along. But there's all sorts of cool stuff. Software-defined radio, I think that's super, super awesome. There's actually going to be a talk on software-defined radio. And what that really is that we've had chips, communication chips, that have become so fast that it can sample pretty much all of the spectrum that we can listen to. And then we can process all of that spectrum into single channels or whatnot. And so there's some really, really cool tools that are coming about because software-defined radio has replaced a lot of the transistors and a lot of the discrete logic that's required of it. And then there's all sorts of crazy stuff. If you like satellites, if you want to bounce signals off of the moon, I mean, come on. If you're doing D&D and you're stuck between the person who's supposed to roll the die is out to having a loo break, it'd be cool to say, hey, I've communicated using, bouncing signals off the moon. That's nerd credibility right there. So there's fun. There's lots of fun stuff. So there's something for everybody. And, really, what's the modern world? I mean, why are we doing this? And interestingly enough, we're kind of in this modern world of tinkering. We're kind of exploring things to really build things again. I think that probably maybe 1995 to maybe 2005. It was kind of a dark time to be a tinkerer because we didn't have these platforms, these tools. And now this is really kind of the commonality. And there's this beautiful stuff, Arduino, Raspberry Pi, all these networks, all these cool stuff. I mean, people are hacking on quadcopters and throwing on all sorts of augmentation to create their own drones and whatnot. And it's cool. We are living in this new world. And really, this tinkering mindset is the same thing as what the old guys, you know, years and years and years ago were doing with the radios. It's just that we have so many more things to play with. So this is very much an augmentation of the existing culture that's here today. One thing that I have to emphasize as well, so communication should be free. We don't have to pay for an internet connection in order to communicate and have international goodwill. We don't have to do that. The airwaves are ours. And if we don't use the airwaves ourselves, then we're going to lose out. You know, the government will say, okay, you know, these amateurs, they're not playing with the spectrum. We allotted all of the spectrum for them, but we don't see them using it. We don't see them exercising their license. And they will take it away. They will give it to the highest bidder. They will give it to Vodafone. They will give it to Telefonica O2. And we will have to cry in our nerdy beers somewhere else. We'll cry. It'll be terrible. All the salt from the tears burning up the circuits on the Raspberry Pis under us. It's just horrible, horrible. We don't want to go there, but I think that they're actually encountering a resurgence. There aren't really recent numbers in terms of people getting their licenses in the UK, but in the US it's actually gone up again. And I think that that's good, because we've got to explore stuff. We've got to have fun with that, right? All right. So if you're curious, if you want to know a little bit more, we have an amateur radio village, which is nearby. We were going to have a giant mast, but the giant mast kind of fell apart the last, at least it wasn't on the motorway, but it fell apart, and so we don't have a giant mast, but it'll be pretty obvious because we'll have a fair amount of antennas. Come on over, we'll chat. We actually have a festival station called GB2 EMF. And if you want to listen in or suggest, you know, hey, you know, ask this question, ask that, or even play around with the dials a little bit, obviously we're happy to share with the experience. So come on over. We'd love to share. We'd love to say, hey, this is the cool stuff. Now, okay, so if you're one of the types of nerds that is, you're like, oh, I'm too shy to actually go up and ask about amateur radio. I'll watch them, but I don't want to touch anything because I might get yelled at. Instead of that, you can actually explore this from your laptop. Just go to websdr.org, and I have two favorites. There's one in University of Twente in the Netherlands. The other is Hack Green, which is in the north of the UK. And I like clicking on that because it is basically a software-defined radio, but it has a web interface. You can actually see the spectrums, and very interestingly enough, you can actually, you know, you can see the waveforms, and you can go, oh, okay, that's voice. And you see the on-off waveforms, and you go, oh, that's going to be Morse code. And you can actually go in and click, and you can see the beautiful waterfall images. And it's really quite exciting because, you know, if you're listening to that, you'll listen, you'll hear a call sign, you'll go like, I wonder if that person actually has a website, you know, giving a little more background. And so, if you heard me talking and I was using 2E0RYS, you could look up on the internet, just on Google, 2E0RYS, you'll see my little bio, and then you'll see a little bit of information about me. So you might be hearing my voice, but you'll also know a little bit more about who I am behind the scenes. And oftentimes, other hams, they'll have their computers nearby, so I'll call up and I'll say, hey, hello, hello, and talk to them, and they'll go, hey, that's a beautiful cat that you have, or, oh, hey, this is really fun. And I used the cat image because that was on my QRZ profile, so, yeah. Does anybody, we have a little bit of time. Does everybody want to hear about ham stereotypes? There's always nerd stereotypes. All right, okay, I'll get that, and then I'll go back to questions. I kind of love just kind of the humor of stereotypes. Like, I work within the IT industry, and there's a stereotype that most DBAs are assholes. So let's, anybody DBA here? No? I make fun of DBAs on stage. It's really fun. So, and the DBAs usually just raise their hand really slowly. So nerd, ham nerd bonus time. Oh, and the reason why they call it ham is because there were professional radio operators that were insulted that there were enthusiasts of the use of radio. So they were like, oh, these guys are just ham radio guys. And the ham radio guys, they were like, I mean, maybe they were insulted for a little while, but then they reappropriated the term. So you could think of it as nerd pride or ham pride, saying, I am a ham. How dare you? So, okay, all right. So the cultural stereotypes here. So 200 Russian watts. So 200 Russian watts is really gets back to this idea of when you have a license, you have a limitation of how much power that you can pump into the atmosphere. And the Russian limitation was 200 watts. But interestingly enough, after various wars and police actions and whatnot within Russia, they had a lot of amplifier equipment. And Russia's a huge country, so they do want to pump out a lot of power in order to communicate with people all over the world. So most of the ham radio, most of the amateur radio regulators, they were also hams. And so they would have, they would show their amplifiers, and they would say 200 watts, but really it was probably 10 times that, so 2,000 watts. And if you're lonely in Siberia and you're pumping out 2,000 watts, you'll be able to communicate and talk with people. So that's cool. We have at least one Italian here. Any other Italians? Yeah, no, just all right. So we've got one Italian here. There is a stereotype amongst European operators that Italians also do not respect the wattage limitation. So when you're, it's very interesting. It's more, mega radio, mega radio. And very interestingly enough, you'll actually see that brightness of signal on the SDR. So if you're going on the web SDR and you see, like normal kind of purpley images, and then you see something that's like white hot, and you click on that, it's going to be an Italian accent speaking. It's just to be given. In addition to that, there's these competitions, these radio sport competitions, where people are trying to make as many connections as possible. And oftentimes, the Italians, they won't follow the rules, and they'll just do whatever they want. Interestingly, and I'm not trying to pick on the Latins here, but Cubans also, they have a signal, but it's all oftentimes over-modulated. So what it is instead of having this amount of bandwidth, you're basically just splattering across lots and lots of frequencies. And people on the U.S. East Coast, they'll look at their spectrum and they'll go, oh, it's Cubans again. So it's kind of a crazy thing, yeah. The Japanese, very courteous. Very, very courteous kind. They're like, oh, yes, hello, da-da-da. Interestingly enough, they're the most licensed. They have... they have 1.3 million licensees, which is a lot, and that's actually kind of symbolic of the fact that the majority of radios, high quality radios, are Japanese. We're starting to see some Chinese kind of stuff popping up. My radio is a super cheap 32 quid handheld radio. That's Chinese, but Japanese are still very enthusiastic. I talked about kind of the grumpy guys, these guys that had to go through Morse code, not because they like it, but because they had to do it in order to get the license. So they're kind of, there's kind of some technical ham butthurt about, hey, you know what? You don't know Morse code, you don't know DIT. And DIT and DIT and DA are the two, the short and long tones in Morse code. So they're just trying, everybody likes their little fiefdom, and so if somebody's coming in and changing the rules of the game, how dare you remix my Elvis song or something like that? It's just people just not adapting with change. Oldsters, old people, holy crap! There's this whole band called 80 Meters. It's about 3,500 to 4,000 kilohertz. And it's usually just old guys just talking about, hell yeah, I was in the garden and the fence fell down So these old guys are just, they're just getting too, So some people joke, yeah, I was transmitting on the back pain network. Were you talking about your visit with the GP? So my boss, I actually came out of the closet as an amateur radio enthusiast to my boss. And my boss said, he's German, so I could maybe simulate his voice, but he said, first I said, oh, I'm into ham radio. He goes, no. And I'm like, oh, shit, did I offend him? Amateur radio? And he said, well, no, actually, I am a world radio sport champion. And I was like, wow, well, sweet. Maybe you've made a contact with my uncle who does that as well. Interestingly enough, these guys are very passionate about racking up the points based upon, you know, how much of an exotic locale that they've made a connection with and how many connections that they make in 48 hours. These guys don't sleep during the contesting. But to the other hams that are just wanting to talk about back pain and just kind of chill out and say, hey, you know, what color, do you have any dogs or other pets? You know, these guys are all offended because they're like, oh, the contesters, they're just trying to make as many contacts as possible. And they're not even socializing. So there's a little bit there's a little bit of umbrage between different cultures, but really they're kind of the jocks of the band because they're really competing against, you know, oh, I got to make all these points and whatnot. And strangely enough, I used to work for a company where the CEO was a world radio sport champion. So I don't know. He's kind of jockish. This is actually a really positive stereotype that women operators are typically very, very good. And I don't know if it's just because it's so male-dominated and like all eyes are on the girls, but all of the contacts, all of the QSLs that I have heard, very articulate. And maybe it's because the tone is a little bit higher, so it's so super, super clear, very, very nice. So it's actually a very positive stereotype to have women hams. And so, come on in, the water's fine if you want to explore that. I'm mindful of time, but I think that we have a little bit of time for questions. So does anybody have any questions? Is that, he'll come around with the microphone. If you ask me too many technical questions, you know, I'm under the influence, so watch out.
Great talk. Where are the radios? Where's your tent?
Oh, where are the radios? Where's the village?
Yeah.
I think it is that away, but I got here about 40 minutes ago, so I actually haven't had the chance to go to the amateur radio village. But if you follow me around, you'll see me eventually get there.
I'll search for antennas.
Yeah. So any other questions? Dumb comments? Really dumb jokes? No. Hey, do you have dumb jokes? He's egging you on. So if you have really dumb jokes to say, you should. No? Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, hey everybody, thanks for grinding through it. We'll get through it some other time. And if you want to know more about the technical aspects or want to know any of the aspects, come see me later on. I will. I am wearing this intentionally, so you can find the guy with the orange jacket, and I'm happy to be the ambassador to help you out. So, yeah. All right. Thanks, everybody.